All right, time for a little F1 preview for the Brazilian Grand Prix that is upcoming this weekend. We've had a hell of a second half so far. It's been really exciting. I think more than what we can ask for in a long time. We've had our latest change in the Drivers' Championship this late in the season. I know I threw out the stat last time, but I think it was like 2012 or something like that. And you got Lando Norris with a 1-point lead going to Brazil over his teammate, Oscar Piastri. You still got Verstappen not too far behind. And then you had Lewis Hamilton submit some of his best races, two out of the last three races. And he's starting to find his groove with Ferrari as well as Leclerc. Leclerc has been on a nice little run in the second half. Just the cream of the crop, really showing up and really giving us all we can ask for to close out this. I don't know. This is our first full season, Aaron. So this is the best season for me. But you know, I don't got much to compare for. But I'm glad we jumped in this year.
We're in, man. We are in. We'll be ready. That's a 9 a.m. Race lights out, as Jason likes to call it. So a good start time for us before we get to Vegas and then some early starts.
Is that Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
Okay. Right before NFL. I dig that. Yeah,
probably a little too close to F1. I mean, I know you don't like getting up for the 6 a.m. races, Rome, but the 6 a.m. time is always pretty nice because you get the race, it's over with, and NFL starts. So it's going to be competing with that 10 a.m. window, I'll be honest. So we're in the multi-view screen. But I mean,
you're going to miss the first quarter of the Bears game there, Jason, it looks
there's
like.
There's no multi-view on my screen. F1. It's going to be all F1.
Well, F1.
Aaron, you know I got the 2-3 possible screen TVs going in my setup, so they'll be both going. But yeah, F1 probably on the primary screen with the Bears, Giants on the secondary screen. But as Rome said, yeah, biggest F1 season for you guys being the first full year, most competitive one. Last year was kind of competitive towards the end of the season. We only got the little bit of the Lando chase first at the end, but definitely the most competitive one probably since the really historic 2021 season with Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. In one of the great showdowns coming down to Abu Dhabi, where those guys were in a tie in the points going into the final race. And as Rome, you mentioned, we got a 1-point difference between the teammates with Norris and Piastri. You got Verstappen lurking. You got four very interesting tracks coming down the stretch here. Brazil, historically a wet track. A lot of weather goes down there. Aaron and I were actually checking the forecast prior to recording. Looked like we got some rain on Saturday, which could impact qualifying, which if it does, you know, you could have a messy starting order depending on, you know, where's the rain falling? How do those guys do their laps during qualifying? So it could be an interesting start to the field. Looks like potential rain on Sunday, but unlikely. So if it does rain, I think this is where why Max Verstappen is the betting favorite of this race. Historic drive last year, coming through the field in the rain. Just no one was any match for him. So I think a Verstappen, Hamilton, you know, those are the guys to look for in a rain race. Lando, I think, is the second betting favorite. He is just absolutely on fire these last couple of races. If you look at his victory in Mexico, strong finishes at the U.S. Grand Prix and in Singapore. So, I mean, really ever since, you know, the engine blew in the Netherlands and Piastri got the win, you know, Lando's really been on it, outscoring Piastri in the last four races. I'm sorry, the last five races. He's outpointed him in every five races. So Lando's got all the momentum. I'm not sure which track Piastri's going to really do it right now because he seems to be almost in a permanent funk. And you got Verstappen potentially in a track that he'd be pretty dominant at. And the Ferraris, did they find something here late? They qualified both really well in Mexico. If it wasn't for the shenanigans on lap one and the penalty for Hamilton, he probably would have been up there in that finish. So a lot to look forward to in this race. I think the weather, especially on Saturday in the qualifying, but even more on the Sunday, is going to play into this could be the most random of the results that can potentially shake up the championship, where you're going to get that cold race in Vegas, then you get two desert tracks in Qatar and Abu Dhabi at the end of the season that probably won't have as much big drama when you get into it, because it'll be a lot of fairly even cars depending on the qualifying. So this could be a pretty big race in shaking up the championship. probably Verstappen's, I would say, best chance to make up a significant amount of points where he doesn't have to get the 9-10 points per weekend. He can get a chunk in this weekend, and it's probably more beneficial.
Yeah, I guess weather's really known, as you mentioned. So predicting rain all 3 days, potentially. Last year, they had a rain delay, I guess, and did qualify the day of the race, which was really different. Lots of overtaking opportunities, they're saying, between turn one and turn four. Lots of twists and turns, kind of slow pieces, and then there's a big straightaway, I guess, up the hill that can provide some opportunity for some action here. Bortoleto, he's from the area, from Brazil, so it'll be his first homecoming race as well. So he'll look to kind of build up on his really good result in Mexico. Real quick, though, before we talk about the race, just want to mention, I did finally watch Formula One, the movie.
Yeah?
I did.
Thoughts?
I watched it with my cousin, you know, after I was, after my eyes got pulled out watching the Raider game, and, it was good. It was good. I did have a problem with Brad Pitt's accent though. I started laughing right when the movie started and I'm like, yo man, why is his accent like that? And then my cousin straight up, he's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. And I haven't hung out with him in like 3 years. The fact that he knew what I was talking about was really hilarious. I'm like, you already know what I'm talking about, do you? He's like, don't say it. I'm like, what do you think I'm going to say? Because I don't know if you know what I'm going to say, what you know, whatever. He's like, you're going to say he has the same accent as Inglourious Basterds. And then I start laughing even more. I'm like, yup.
I don't know. Accent. I guess I missed it. I didn't feel he was doing an accent, but I think it's just a speaking pattern.
What? I don't know. I thought it was really hilarious. Just, yeah, he had an accent. So I really want to watch it again. I want to watch Inglourious Basterds again, and I want to watch that again. But the accent, you know, just like the crazy, it was so cheesy. It was kind of cheesy. It was good, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it sounds like I liked it more than you. I think I gave my review earlier in the year. I did not notice an accent. I said it was something you need to see on the big screen. I actually did watch it again here a couple weeks ago.
I do need to watch
the
big screen.
With my dad.
Yeah.
To me, the most unrealistic thing is just the wing stuff and what, like, if you were to start breaking three wings in the middle of a race right now, like,
oh,
the stewards would have black flagged you and you'd have been fined and just sent to the back. So that's probably the most unrealistic thing. I mean, the director even told like Lewis Hamilton, who executive produced the movie, and some others, when they went to see it, like, remember, this is it's a Hollywood production. Like, you know, it's not going to be everything what would be in the race. So there's I would say my biggest nitpick was the order of races when they went there, because like, this is not the Formula One schedule. This is seven races at the end of the year. We're like hopping all over the place. This is not the order of things. We're out of order. But yeah, if that's the most you can say for me out of the movie, I think the action and the realistic, you know, not really relying on a bunch of CGI, how they incorporate a little bit of the F1 history into it. I think the first real scene, honestly, at the 24 hours of Daytona was like awesome too. And something like that, as far as like establishing what this character is about as a driver, and even into the ending on how he is as a driver. So yeah, I think,
yeah, he just walks away. He just walks away back in his van to go do Baja racing. Like,
what's it is, man.
He finally wins one
for the race. Yeah. Just needed the one, man. And then move on. So,
you didn't take that job, you know? I don't know. It was good, though.
Whenever I watch it, Rome, I'll give you my review.
It was good. I wasn't buying the accent. Of course, the women were gorgeous on, you know, like the pit crew, and then like even like the boss ladies. So it kind of made sense that he hooked up with her and all this stuff. But the cocky young driver who doesn't respect him. The driving was really cool. They're making the changes to the cars, so it's actually not a shitbox anymore. But it was definitely on the cheesier side. Toto Wolff making an appearance, them incorporating like some of the bosses in F1, where like, these guys have never acted in their fucking life before. You could just read it, you know. It was even worse than like Space Jam, when they got all the basketball players and they lost their talents and they're trying to touch the ball, and you could just tell these guys have never been to the camera before. It was just as bad. But
I don't know, when they have the interview with Fred Vasseur and Zach Brown on the couches and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, no, I think that was a top tier acting, man. When they asked Fred Vasseur, like, what do you think of like the Apex thing?
Them.
He's like, we don't think about him at all.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
That was good, man.
I'm like, that's actually an answer I would totally believe. Like,
that's what I want the Ferrari boss to say, man. Like, I don't think about
that. Was good. Man. That was good. But no, it was cheesy, but I thought cinematography was great. Are they doing number two?
They haven't announced anything on that. I think given the scale and budget of the film, I don't know where they go. I mean, there was a lot of conversation because Paramount had greenlighted the Days of Thunder sequel. And so there was a rumor out there that was just a rumor. I think it was just more just the director wanting to do is like you converge a sequel into having the F1 movie and Days of Thunder like co-mingle into like some sort of big movie with the Brad Pitt character of Sonny Hayes and the Tom Cruise Cole Trickle, because they both have this IndyCar legacy. Because in the F1 movie, you know, Sonny Hayes, the Brad Pitt character, his dad was an IndyCar mechanic. And then the Tom Cruise origin story of Days of Thunder of Cole Trickle was that he was an open wheel like champion that they were bringing to NASCAR. So like, I think, I don't know if it's Joseph Kaczynski, the director of the F1 movie, he also did Top Gun. He's a big Days of Thunder fan. I don't know if he was talking through like that could have looked like, because he obviously directed Top Gun with Tom Cruise and then did this movie with Brad Pitt. So there's a kind of connection there. So I don't know if they'll do a sequel. I don't know what it would look like, but I think definitely if you're going to spend the rumored budget of this movie and like what it was, like you definitely needed to be a hit to like pay back, you know, what it costed. Cause no CGI, just like Top Gun Maverick that Joseph Kaczynski did, like they're using practical stuff. Like Brad Pitt was in an F1 car, him and, Damon Idris, the other actor of the movie, they were driving real cars, maybe not going 200 miles an hour. I mean, they were getting close, but there was on-screen shots and stuff. It wasn't just them sitting in like, you know, a little plastic tube with a green screen behind themselves to establish these scenes.
Yeah. I thought it was like almost a little Michael Bay-ish where it could have used like another level of like, you know, script writing and stuff like that. But other than that, though, it was pretty fun to watch.
I'd say it's better than a Michael Bay, but I get what you're saying. What I'll say about this movie and then we're not into the movie podcast, Roman.
Yeah.
I long want to start here at a certain point. But what I'll long say about it is this is the kind of classic, you know, summer action movie that was a staple of our youth in the 90s that you would just get, a $70 million action movie that's just like great. Like I'll think of like the Nick Cage run of the 90s where I get The Rock, Con Air, Gone in 60 Seconds, you know, Face Off, like something like that. That's like,
That was a good run.
Right. Like, it's just, I mean, that was that thing. Or, you know, I'm going to get something like, you know, cult favorite of mine, The Negotiator, Samuel Jackson, Kevin Spacey, Chicago. You know, we don't get those type of movies where it's like, hey, this is a solid 70% movie on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a quick, like 90 to 110 minute movie, simple plot, simple action, clear bad guy. What's going on? Like they don't make that stuff. Everything's built for the franchise. This is a little bit of a higher tier, obviously from a budget for the F1 movie, but as much as, again, I love Marvel and Star Wars and all that stuff and the franchise stuff that brings to Hollywood, there's an element of like, hey, you can get a bunch of dudes like us going to the movie to watch like just a simple action movie that you can make for a decent price that has this. And this is what I feel that this movie kind of brings about.
Nah, I finally watched it. My cousin was not appreciative of me laughing at a lot of parts in the movie. The accent was there.
I'll be honest. Dude. I would have been the same. When you started your review here, I'm like, dude, are we about to fight right now over the F1 movie? Because like,
dude, the accent is just. He's like, that's just the way he talks, man. Like, that's not the way Brad Pitt talks at all. Dude.
I feel it is the way he talks, man. He's not trying to be a German guy in World War II or whatever like that. Or
it's, you got to watch it again. Like, watch Inglourious Bastards, then watch that movie. Like, it is so. I don't know. I gotta do that.
I guess you gotta kind of watch a couple of his movies after that movie to determine like, hey, is this how he talks? Or yeah,
he's never talked like that before.
I don't know, because it was Inglourious Basterds, or he's talking the same way he's talking in the Tarantino movie.
Which one?
The one with DiCaprio that they're making the prequel to right now. Once Upon
Hollywood?
A Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I never saw that
one either.
It didn't look good.
It's a good It's good, I would say. Like,
isn't it like for, 3 hours or something?
That's how everyone describes it. Like, yeah. It's good.
They said it's one of Tarantino's best, but I disagree. For me, like Pulp Fiction and, some of these others.
Tarantino's older stuff was really good.
Like the raw stuff's really good. It's like watching what was that 3 hour Scorsese movie that he brought De Niro back and
The Irishman. Terrible movie.
That's probably
terrible. I was 20 minutes in. I'm like, I'm not watching more wax makeup stuff. I'm done. This is bad.
Yeah.
The 80-year-old guys dressed like 20-year-olds. This is terrible.
I remember arguing with my family about that because they they're just old school. They love Scorsese and De Niro and stuff. I was like, this movie needed to be about an hour shorter at the max. Like, this was like, hey, it might have started a good story. Scorsese, now that he's just got all this power, man, he just doesn't hire an editor. Because this last movie he made, too, was like 3 hour plus long, too, that I was checked out in. I'm sure it was great. But
DiCaprio?
Yeah, it was Scorsese, DiCaprio. It was De Niro was in it, too. Forgot what that movie was, but...
He needs an editor. Like, he's got one right there. Rome's ready to edit. He's available.
Yeah.
I'm ready to edit now. Yeah, editing takes forever. All right. That was a big side quest. I just want to mention I did watch F1. I enjoyed it, but I thought it was comical. And I'll watch it again, maybe like on a better setting, like in a movie theater setting. But the accent just like cracked me up, dude. They cracked me up. And then his spine stuff, dude. You shouldn't even be driving and then he crashes. I thought he was going to die on the track.
The funny stuff, you go into that room, because if you were following, well, you weren't, but I definitely was. When they were filming this movie, there was a Twitter account that was like, I guess it was a parody account, that was the Apex F1 team Twitter account. Oh. And when they were filming these things at the races, there was like, fan videos of like things that go on. And so, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the movie yet, he crashes in Las Vegas because he's just driving angry.
Yeah.
And so in the movie itself, like, he's driving angry, they're in the thing, he ends up crashing into the wall, going into the final stretch across the start finish line, and then he wakes up in the hospital. Sorry, Aaron, for you seeing this. But there was video going around, though, of him fainting on the strip and everything, like, too. And so, like, none of that wound up even in the movie, where he was just, like, stumbling around and then, like, fainted and stuff. So there was a lot of different stuff, I think, in the cutting room floor.
I remember people talking about the crashes, and then when watched the movie, I'm like, wait a minute, like, that's not what I heard happen, when they were filming shots. So yeah, they must have filmed extra stuff. It didn't make it, or they just chopped it up differently, but definitely a must. I'm not sure if it's the best sports movie in the past quarter century. I think I have to go back and review it, but I know that was like Bill Simmons' big thing and everyone else. It was good though.
I'd have to put a comprehensive list together to think of the best sports movie. I mean, in the last 25 years,
not like a lot Moneyball, of good has come out. Moneyball's good.
Moneyball's the one like I hold together. I know people can throw poke holes in it. It's like they over-index on the players that are in there, and they never talk about Zito, Mulder, and Hudson one time in that movie, and why they were competitive and won the 20 plus consecutive games or whatever it was in that movie. Huh. But there's some solid sort movies. We could say that for another time, Rome.
We will. Yeah. Anyways, F1, go watch it. It's hilarious. It's so funny, dude. The accent. Tell me it's not Inglourious Basterds. All right. So back to Brazil Grand Prix. Thoughts going into this, predictions, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the weather's the big wild card. This is probably out of the last three, the most difficult one we're probably gonna be able to predict. We'll say it every week, I think, lead up into Las Vegas, but Aaron and I are hedging on the Mercedes when we get to Las Vegas here in a couple weeks. So I think George Russell looked good for that. I think George could look good in this race too, but I think you give the edge to Verstappen. He's the betting favorite. I think he's the, whatever the wild card is, the weather, he needs to make up positions. I think you likely see him get the win. I think Lando just been driving much better than pretty much every other driver out there, especially his teammate at this point too. And when it comes to qualifying, he's been there as well too. So I'd expect, a podium finish out of Lando, probably second. Piastri, I just don't know what you're getting. He had a good kind of recovery drive throughout the Mexican Grand Prix, but hasn't been there, getting outscored. Charles Leclerc has been looking good the last 2 weeks in Mexico and there. So you can see him getting the podium again, getting third. And if it's the weather, I got to think Lewis Hamilton, I don't, I'm, you have to check me on this. I know I'm generally the stat guy on this. I don't think Hamilton's ever had a season where he hasn't been on the podium. And so now you have four races to go and he's never been on the podium. This might be his best shot. Brazil is like his second home. Loves Brazil. I think he's an honorary citizen of there. If it does rain, I think he's one of the favorites could be up there. So if he qualifies well, gets into it, I could see him sneaking on the podium too.
I keep on hearing about his epic like overtake in like 2008. I wrote it down somewhere. It was over Toyota's Timo Glock. It was in 2008, and that's what got him to become the champion. Was that his first time in 2008?
Yep, that was his first time. That was his one and only title with McLaren, his second year in F1. But yeah, I mean, when you look at old clips of Lewis, as you guys, you know, newer to the sport and watch just like how great he was for, you know,
he was the face of F1. I mean, I remember never watching it, but it was always like Lewis Hamilton. He was ESPN always was covering him.
I never really followed him. I just like, because I dress sometimes a little weird and everyone's like, what are you trying to dress like Lewis Hamilton? Like, I don't know who the fuck that is. But now I get it.
I think Lewis, like, I mean, a little bit like Tiger Woods when you look at golf, you know, 25 plus years ago, whatever, like, you know, he's beyond the sport. You know, he has brought a lot of people to this sport prior to Drive to Survive. I think that was obviously the surge in popularity. But when you think a global star out of anyone in F1, like he personifies that. And you mentioned the dressing, but I mean, this guy's a fashion icon when it comes into it too, beyond like the racing aspect where, you know, you compare to him versus Verstappen, like Verstappen's just a pure driver, man. This guy's just like, racing's his life. He doesn't want to do anything else but racing. If it's not racing Formula One, he's racing, you know, endurance cars. He's racing sims and e-racing and things like that. Where Hamilton's one of the greatest.
Is Verstappen the Sonny Hayes version of the F1, the movie?
No.
Racing whatever? Whatever's got to,
It would be Hülkenberg, I think.
Yeah, I think if there was an injury out there that brought him back or whatever, something, but yeah, Hülkenberg was away, didn't have a ride. I don't think it's a perfect comparison, but yeah, it'd be somebody like that who never won, and maybe
everyone
was
respected him, but just never won it.
Yeah, that's a good one, Rome. I mean, I don't think anyone perfectly lines up to the Sonny Hayes character, because I don't think you're going to get a guy who was a prodigy, got into a bad accident, and comes back 25 years later into F1.
That storyline, too, though, is like, oh, he just gets in an accident, like, right in early in his career, never comes back, just wins in every other circuit, and then like, oh, I need you to save my team. They're gonna make me sell it. Come, I'm offering you a seat on F1. Okay, sure. It's like, what?
Well, I mean, I think the background, again, you're trashing the movie here, Rome, but I think the background is like
the movie. Am I trashing the movie, Aaron? You're not giving it lighted reviews. You're kind of like, Rome, you're kind of like your picks. It's like you're leaning one way, then you're leaning the other way. I'm not sure which way you're really leaning here. You're kind of wishy-washy. You're a little wishy-washy for me.
You're glossing over the team. It's a fledgling team. They, you know, he was the ninth choice, Rome. They didn't go to him first. It was nobody wants to drive for this team. They're basically, I mean, give or take, they're kind of like Haas to a degree, where we're like, okay, they don't got a lot of money. We got to take a guy and a chance. You know, there was a time that the Haas drivers, you know, they basically signed like the son of a Russian oligarch, you know, to drive one of their cars for a while. But Haas, the team that brought Hülkenberg back. And got him back after he didn't have a ride. So, you know, I'm giving your comparison a little bit of credence there. I don't know why we got to talk to this F1 movie again, though.
Sorry, man.
But Rome, yeah, I think this. That was his big segment when he talked earlier. I'm going to bring up F1 the movie.
I'm looking forward to this race, though. I think this is the biggest wild card of the remaining four. You know, you got it's a sprint weekend. So you're going to get additional, like, you know, the Saturday component into it, more points up for grab.
How many points?
You get, you know, it's an 8-1 point allocation in the sprint.
Okay.
And so you'll have one here, and I believe Cutter has got the other one two races from now. So that's where Verstappen's got to get it. If you think back to the Austin sprints, both McLaren's got knocked out in that one. Verstappen got 8 points on both of them. And I think he needs 9 points per weekend to catch up to Lando. And that's, he's going to need some success out of that too. So for Lando's sake, he needs to have a good result, but also these guys got to maintain points. So I think that's where McLaren, the drama there is like, they could lose the championship if these guys go hard at each other. But then it becomes like, okay, we get down to it. You know, what's the strategy so you're not favoring one driver over the other? Because I think it'll be a pretty clear picture, you know, where Verstappen stands in, you know, the driver's championship, you know, probably after Vegas would be my guess. And then, you know, if McLaren does their job right, it should come down to Abu Dhabi and a showdown between the two drivers. And then, hey, you guys do what you figure out what's going to go there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't believe the Red Bull does well when it's cold out. From what I can remember, they usually weren't racing as well. I mean, Jason and I have touched on it. We like George Russell in Vegas. He could come in Sao Paulo and race well. Verstappen, if he has a good weekend, you know, he's going to put the pressure on. I think the key is, you know, for Oscar, can he have a good race? Can he get back on the podium? I think it's important for him to get on the podium to keep pressure on Lando and to keep his championship hopes alive, because I think a fifth or sixth place finish and Lando finishing first or second, we could see Piastri fall away to third place and Verstappen be going second or first when this thing's all said and done.
Okay. You guys want to do some predictions for top 10 or at least podium?
I got some odds for you, Rome, if you're interested, for podium, top three.
Let's hear it.
So top three, let me see. Let me go back and find here. Fastest lap. So you got Blair's got plus 120, George Russell's plus 130, Lando's a big minus 450, Verstappen's a big minus 500, and then Oscar Piastri's minus 143. So these are your top three odds to finish on podium. And you got Lewis Hamilton's at plus 220. So, you know, that, you know, Jason says he likes him here this week. So, and this is before qualifying. Obviously, after qualifying, these odds will change once you know what position they are in, too. So these are all, you're going to get better odds right now on, Piastri and those guys at minus 140, plus 200 before qualifying, especially if they get, you know, P1, P2, or P3.
I know my bias is clear if you're talking podium, Rome. I think Verstappen wins this race. I think Lando's second, and I think this is Lewis's time, you know, to get the podium. You know, it's bias, but I think this is the track that he can do it. And I think this is where he probably outpaces Leclerc. And for Lando and Max, I think this is where they put Oscar a little bit more into the distance this weekend.
What I'm hoping for is a little change-up. I hope Bortoleto does well. Maybe gets podium, shakes things up. Hamilton gets podium. Lando gets podium. And then everyone else can finish out the top five, however they want to do it. But I like to see some unforeseen drivers take podium in this one.
Yeah, I think one and two, Verstappen and Lando makes sense. Oscar, I'm worried about him. He hasn't raced well. Maybe he surprises us and get first or second. I'm keeping an eye on George Russell. I think he's going to have a good race. I think he's a sneaky one to get on the podium this weekend.
What's the name of the driver that the other driver, Sonny Hayes' counterpoint, the Ibra guy?
Damon Idris, Joshua Pierce.
Joshua Pierce, yeah. I hope Oscar Piastri just drives angry, you know, and takes too much on a turn and crashes. And,
I think he's already done that, Rome, more than once over the last past few races.
I'm not hoping for that. I want a championship showdown. I want a little bit of a drama with it. But I do think that momentum is definitely in Lando's way. And again, you know, I've said at the beginning of the year, this is Lando's year to win the championship. We don't know what the 2026 regs are going to be. Is McLaren going to have the dominance? You never know when your year is in Formula One where you could get one shot at winning a championship. Aaron wasn't on for our NASCAR segment where I was ripping NASCAR a little bit on Sunday. But, a guy like Denny Hamlin, who is the greatest NASCAR driver, 20 plus seasons, never won a championship. You know, it comes down to him for one race there at the Chase. And, you know, he may never win the championship. And for Formula One, you look at the legacy of Formula One, a little like basketball, where you have dynasties when you think about the Schumacher era, the Hamilton era, the Verstappen era right now. These guys, when there's somebody winning or constructors winning, it's for a prolonged period of time. And then in between that, there's some guys that, you know, won the championship and, you know, you become the world champion one time, you know, it stays on the resume. And I think some of these guys are just looking for that one time. I think this is that one year for Lando where it really goes. And I pose this question. I can't remember if it's our last Formula One pod. I know Rome, you're a little bit about it too, but how close this gets in the drama into that final race. I'm really questioning what's the future of McLaren between these two drivers, because someone's going to win and someone's going to lose. And what are the feelings of that person that definitely loses going into next season? And you know, they got contract and all sort of weird stuff, but you know, there could be some feelings one way or the other. It was already starting iffy last year with some manipulation on who should finish ahead where, and what the papaya rules that were make so famous. Like, you know, there could be some hurt feelings.
Does someone rat out the papaya rules? Does, like, if I don't think Lando would, but Piastri, like, if he leaves, say, in a couple years, does he kind of basically pin him on blast? Like, hey, these were the rules. This is how it was internally. I think it only gets interesting if it stays close. Like, if Oscar has a bad week and it gets six or seven, if Lando wins, I think the drama from it goes away. But if they go into the final race and whoever wins that race or gets second takes home the driver's championship, I think that's real interesting. We've had a really drama filled year in a lot of sports. So hopefully we can get it. Or maybe even Verstappen gets back in there in the sprint race, like Jason said, and gets a lot more points this weekend. So a lot that could happen. So I think Sao Paulo is going to be a big race here and entertaining. I think we're going to see some stuff we're not expecting this weekend.
The Verstappen end of it is the most interesting thing I think you make, because there hasn't been a ton of love for the McLaren showdown, because it's been more about the politicking in the drivers versus the 2021 season that you guys didn't get to witness, where it was Mercedes Hamilton versus Red Bull Verstappen, and it was two teams battling it out, and these guys had an on-track crash in Silverstone that was pretty memorable, and just different drama throughout the season. But it was two teams dueling, you know, two top drivers at the top of their game dueling for a championship. Where here, hey, you got two pretty good drivers in a great car, and it's like we're politicking over some stuff, and it hasn't been as drama, where the villain of Formula One has been Verstappen the past couple of years because of his dominance and just overall, you know, he just doesn't have maybe if it's the charisma or whatever, the guy's just a pure racer, pretty race car driver. But they've turned Verstappen, if we're going right, we're throwing wrestling into this, Verstappen was a heel and he's kind of getting turned into the baby face right now, because there's people rooting at a certain point now for, hey, he can get a fifth world championship in a row, and we'd rather see that versus like the political bickering between McLaren choosing who they're going to win the championship with. Norris and Piastri.
I agree with that, Jason, but do we see a heel come from McLaren? Does somebody turn? Does somebody turn heel towards the end here and just does their own thing, their own rules, and says, I want to go for it. I don't care what the team says.
Yeah, I think we're already seeing that.
I think it's coming down to it. My guess is we'll more see it
I think Piastri's boiling. I think the water's getting hot and getting ready to boil over. We've been seeing it for the last, four or five races.
Yeah, 100%. Final thoughts.
Rookies, I want to talk about that, Rome. You've been talking a little about Gabriel Bortoleto. Yeah. You got him squeaking in the podium, maybe. You know, he's been good. Ollie Bearman, had the good race in Mexico, got points in Singapore and the U.S. Grand Prix, also had points in the Netherlands, and then was it Britain? I think Great Britain he did at the British Grand Prix. And then he had a string of, like, I don't know if he set the F1 record for, like, how many times he finished 11th and didn't get points. So if you're looking at Rookie of the Year, we've talked a lot of these different great drivers. It's a tremendous class with, you know, where Isaac Hadjar has been. Like, Hadjar's 10th in points right now. Top of some of these drivers and the mid-car teams. But Behrman's got the surging. Bortoleto's put in some good runs where he's kind of outpaced Hulkenberg a little bit. I think Kimi Antonelli is getting kind of dismissed because he's got the more dominant car, but you look at him, it's 7th in the points right now. There's a bright future for Formula One that I think, you know, as you guys have experienced your first season, interesting out of this group of like four or five drivers out of these rookies this season, like, hey, this is a crop of guys that are going to be driving for the championship here over the next, you know, in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years.
He has 6 races that he finished 11th or 12th. That's crazy.
Yeah. Which the crazy thing about the Formula One point system, like, I don't know how they revamp it. Like, to me, like, I think that the more teams should be in the points than just the top 10, because I think there should be, especially when you're deciding, like, the constructors on, like, 5th through 10, like, you're telling me a guy not finishing the race is the same as a guy finishing 11th five races in a row? Like, I think there could be some more distinction on how these guys are actually going the whole Grand Prix, because there's elements of some of these races where it becomes like, ah, no one cares because we're in 12th place. We can get some battles on the track if these guys are actually fighting for points, you know, more down the order.
Yeah, if you don't finish, I get that 0 points. But yeah, even if you finished 11th, you just still got 0 points. Like, at least if you finish 10th through, you know, whatever, 1 point going up to maybe two or three. I don't know how you divide that. And then going up from there, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we have the 22 teams next season. So I think going down to at least like a 15th would be okay.
Yeah.
And still the same point allocations, 25. Maybe it's a different way they cut the points up. I mean, back in the day, it was like, I don't know, it was like the top five only got points. And that's why, like, there was like races where drivers like didn't even race for a couple of races, but they, you know, won a bunch. And so it was different. I mean, the current system isn't bad. I ripped the NASCAR system on Sunday's pod. This is still way better than the crap system NASCAR has. But yeah, I think there's an argument to be made of points going all the way down to 15th place to understand, you know, mid-car battles. I mean, you're talking about the importance of finishing, you know, 5th through 9th in the constructors and where things are at. It puts too much on to, like, you know, last year Alpine was a perfect example. Brazil race happened. They did a favorable strategy in the rain. They get Ocon and Gasly 2nd and 3rd on the podium, and those guys goes from last place up to, like, 6 in the constructors just on one race, and it doesn't even factor to all the terrible finishes those guys had for like 20 other races out of the year.
Would there be a point system for if you don't finish or get DQ'd or whatever, negative point system coming? Like -3, -5, if you're going to reward 15 spots?
I don't think so, only just because like in Formula One, because basically like they throw in the towel, like if they go off the track and anything happens and they got to get towed and there's basically like race over. On like NASCAR, yeah, where like these guys on the season finale of NASCAR, the final race, man, you these guys blown out tires, smash into the wall, change the tire and get back in the race. Like Formula One, you blow out a tire and you can't get around. I mean, the race is kind of over for you. So I don't know if you go negative.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, I'm excited for the race this weekend. We'll try to get Andrew on the recap, maybe. We'll see. Depends how fun he has this weekend, I guess.
And maybe you know, what, a month ago he's working on his Spanish. Maybe he's working on his Portuguese this week in Rome. We'll find out.
Maybe. Real quick, Lakers won 118-116.
Yeah.
Tight.
Blazers beat the Thunder, so there's no longer an undefeated team in the NBA.
We'll talk basketball soon enough. Lots of good stuff. Lots of crazy storylines. Are Chicago real or not? We don't know. But this was F1. Any final comments?
I don't know. You're trying to take shots at Chicago out the way you're giving updates on the Lakers. You know, the Blackhawks won and beat the Canucks 5-2 tonight. And then the Bulls came back from a huge deficit last night and beat the 76ers pretty much at the buzzer.
With a triple double. With a triple double. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're on the F1 pod, but you're shouting out Lakers stuff and you're just dismissing the Bulls.
The Lakers aren't on the podium and the Bulls are right now. So let's just leave it at that.
No chance, because this is a Red Wings podcast here. 9 wins, 5 losses.
What about the Ducks? 8-3 right now. Got to get 2 wins over the Florida Panthers. Possible preview Stanley Cup final for the repeat? You never know.
They brought the old logo back, though. I like it. The Ducks, they brought it back.
Blackhawks beat the Ducks earlier in the season.
Yeah, they did. They're what, 6-5 now, Blackhawks?
It's like Ryan, like when you're a kid, and like the kid's like, well, your mom's a hoe. Like, that's it.
Oh, I didn't say that, Rome, but what I will say, and you're going to get tired of me saying this, right? God is on our side in Chicago. It's the Pope's team now. And so, you know, the Bears, we get the win with the Bears, the Bulls riding high, the Blackhawks, they thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league, and they're sitting at 6-5. It's Chicago's time.
God may be on side, maybe on your guys' side. Just leave the kids out of it, okay? That was a Catholic joke.
Yeah, no. I got what you were doing there. Leave that off the stand-up list, Rome. That one didn't hit.
Yeah, that one was a dud, Rome. That one was a dud.
Because that was hilarious.
Use that one to wipe your ass next time.
Yeah. No. All right. That'll do it for F1 coverage. Preview, I don't think we've ever done a preview, at least not in a while. Brazilian Grand Prix this weekend. That'll do it for us. Me, Rome, Jason, and Aaron. We are out.